Hello, and welcome to the Architects of Destination Advocacy podcast from Destinations International, the trade association representing destination organizations around the globe, brought to you exclusively by Relic Agency as part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andreas Weisenborn, and welcome you for checking out our podcast. For each episode, we want to tell the story of both usual and unusual suspects in our sector's history and the key advocacy moments for them. These stories are meant to tell the tale in full, covering many of our strategic issues and opportunities our sector faces, whether it be community alignment, destination stewardship, resilience, or actions based on values. We hope you listen in and learn from your peers. With that, let's get to the show. Hello, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Architects of Destination Advocacy. First and foremost, before our guest, big news, hopefully you all saw, we announced the registration is open for the 2023 annual convention. The big show, actually, in Dallas, Texas. Please hop on. Always want to get that good inside the block and funness with that. But if you're, in case you're unaware, we're going to have our 2023 annual convention in Dallas, Texas, July 18th through the 20th, 2023, in the Omni Dallas Hotel. If you're curious to how to get registered, hop online, go to destinationsinternational.org. You'll see it right there, bright in the beginning as part of it. But again, look forward to hopefully seeing there to another successful annual convention for us. So that, let's actually get on to the show today. So for today's conversation and guest, it's really intended to be a little bit of a peek behind the curtains of managing a destination's brand through extremely polarizing times, something I think you're going to hear a lot about on this show. I mentioned at lengths at which the world has begun to spin and seems like more and more illogical ways. Now, not necessarily illogical in the context of negative, but illogical as in maybe moving more towards emotional-based discussions and decisions. And really the outcome of that is issues and policies really entering the zeitgeist of our communities in a very polarizing fashion. So the job of a destination organization was already tough enough, you know, said pandemic and other complications from 2020. But how do you actually start to push through your brand and promotion against such political and social issues that feel like they divide the nation, especially our nation, the United States? So navigating such a destination requires a wearer of many hats and hearing how he sets up all the chess pieces. So please welcome to the show, Dominic Bravo, CEO of Visit Cheyenne of Wyoming. Dominic, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So just for the listener's pleasure, mind just giving a little brief intro and background to yourself and background of also Visit Cheyenne?
Yeah, for sure. And it probably will add into the discussion.
Absolutely.
I came into Cheyenne by way of state parks. I was hired as the state park director in 2008. Was originally a law enforcement park ranger in Nevada and pretty much worked for state parks for about 11 years, helped them set out the outdoor rec office and a couple other amazing things we got to get done during that time. And then fairly quickly did a brief stint over at the University of Wyoming in the outdoor recreation and tourism program, and was also on the board here at Visit Cheyenne. And when the job opened up as CEO, I just love the organization, love the community, and was excited to put my name in the hat. So I've been here at Visit Cheyenne as the CEO since 2020. So a couple months right before the pandemic hit, which was also an interesting situation, as you stated. So Visit Cheyenne has been around since the 80s. It is a joint powers economic promotion board that does business as Visit Cheyenne. So it's Laramie County's destination management organization. And yeah, we've done a lot of amazing things over the years and really have kicked it into high gear the last couple, especially with our tourism master plan. But yeah, I think politics have been a major part of my career since I got here in Cheyenne and for the state of Wyoming. And hopefully through our discussion today, we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. And one part about your background, I'm sort of curious, your spot with the Parks Department. Did you guys interact much with Visit Cheyenne at the time? Was there known lanes or overlap, just out of curiosity?
So not a major piece. Obviously, most state government is housed here in the capital city of Cheyenne. So A few of our larger events, like we had an ice festival where we encouraged youth to get outdoors and do things in the wintertime. Visit Cheyenne was one of our primary sponsors and coordinators for that because we shut down actual highways and made snow in the downtown of Cheyenne.
That's pretty cool.
To be able to pull that off. So yeah, we partnered with them on numerous things. We have a lot of assets here in the city and in the county. So yeah, we worked with them pretty closely.
Sort of modest to talk about the assets of your parks in the state of Wyoming. Some of the greatest natural resources in the world. So being a little modest, Dominic, saying that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're a state of firsts. I mean, we have the first national park, first national historic site, one of the first national forests. I mean, all the things that make us big, and then some pretty iconic state parks. We have Hot Springs State Park, one of the oldest, some of the most impressive historic sites you can find. So yeah, some pretty amazing places.
As both your role in that in the parks and now with Visit Cheyenne, I'm just sort of curious, would you describe yourself as a, you know, I would say not a government employee, but a steward of the public per se?
Yeah, I mean, I've always taken that concept of public service to heart, and I've always maintained that I try not to be a bureaucrat. so it's one of those things that I think you have to be able to serve all people at the maximum level, and that's really what we try to strive to do.
Absolutely. So I think to help really set up the conversation, I'd love to kind of give some context to the community of Cheyenne against the state. I'm not saying against, but against the broader context of how people see the state of Wyoming, particularly in the news. We'll get into, I think, how people see the state is much different than how those inside a city or community within the state see it. So I wonder if you could actually provide a little bit of that context.
Yeah, so I mean, it's no secret that Wyoming is a red state. We've been a very conservative Republican state for as long as we've been in existence, really heavy on that Western heritage, but at the same time have very unique components that we're proud of. For instance, we're considered the equality state. So we, the inherent right to vote has always been with women. However, that actual recognizing it, we exceeded the United States by 50 years. So we just recently celebrated 150 years of Wyoming's women's suffrage just recently. So it's one of those things that as much as we get some flack about certain topics, I think early on in our territorial days, we were really trying to be pretty thoughtful in who we are and where we are situated as a state. Our big economy is energy extraction. So, I mean, it's, you know, we're in the energy industry as a, you know, big time. Second is tourism. So as we just mentioned earlier, I mean, all the iconic things that we have from an outdoor recreation standpoint and these beautiful vistas that you don't find anywhere else. We definitely market to the rest of the world. And then outside of that is agriculture is our third one. So all of that plays into the politics of what we have. And then as of late, we are also one of the states that really has some of those groups that are on the far reaches of what true Republican Party is, which I think does play into things that you see in the national media. So it's very difficult these days to be in the Republican Party. Only because you have those folks that are more of the traditional conservative folks. And then what I really feel that some in the party are a little bit more on the extreme side, which exists, again, in both parties. Being the capital city is also very unique for Cheyenne. I mean, even its history is kind of fraught with politics as folks in the middle of the state wanted to have the capital city be there, you know, in the late 1800s. So it's, and then I won't even get into the cattle baron wars and everything else that you've seen here in our state, but yeah, we're definitely a state of fighters and we definitely try to uphold our way of Western life. But as of late, politics have been at the forefront of many of the decisions we have to think about before we move forward with stuff.
So that's a lot. I mean, I think that's the greatest history lesson. I did want to point out, man, like the change of words of the lexicon at work here, where you described anywhere in the energy production, energy generation, you know, you didn't say, you know, we drill oil, gas, and that kind of good stuff. So just want to call that out like a true politician as part of it. You've articulated basically an extensive history here of sort of, you know, sort of a contrast of perception, it sounds like, you know, being perceived, obviously known, read and that kind of stuff, but also illustrating the other aspects of freedom and rights that is also part of the same ethos. Is that kind of tough, that sort of balance, you know, in your role in day to day?
So, and I think as you had mentioned early on in this podcast is I think all of us in this industry are really great at that emotional intelligence piece. So we know how to read the room. We know who we're dealing with. So I would say it's not that it's difficult as much as you have to be thoughtful in everything that you do. I'll actually use an example from Parks previously. We were doing a lot of things because diversity, equity, inclusion was a big piece of topics going on, kind of that best practice concept for state parks. And you figure it's everything from California through the Rocky Mountains over to the East Coast, and trying to find that balance of what you can do in a state that doesn't scream it from the rooftops. I mean, it's something that's important. We care about our citizens. We care about each other. But sometimes, based on platform, you don't always say that overtly. Mm-hmm. So some of our programming at the state park level, we were able to implement some pretty substantial programs. I mean, we, made it so that our restrooms were gender neutral. So we just said, it's a restroom. If you want to use it, you use the restroom, no matter what it is. And some of the other stuff, we did some rainbow specific logos and things like that. But the key here is what we didn't do is where another state may actually do a big press release and say, hey, look at all the cool stuff we're doing in this DEI space or EDI space. We didn't spring it, scream it from the rafters. We didn't want to get credit for actually implementing something. At the same time, we were able to move that needle and do it. And I think that's the difference, is willing to make some change, but also not ruffle feathers by, being out there in your face in front of some of the stuff where you could do it in maybe another state. But still, as I mentioned, moving the needle. So I think that's a prime example of being strategic, being political, but still trying to do what's best for the maximum good. I think that's as any good public policy, is you're trying to do the greatest good for the greatest amount of people.
Yeah. Well, so this is kind of the fun stuff I wanted to get into, of navigating the pieces. I'm curious, since Wyoming has been in the news in the past 2 weeks, I would say not the most best perception. What goes through your mind? I'm just curious, when you see your state and or community on the national spotlight, and maybe not the most pleasing ways, I'm just curious what goes through your mind and sort of your mindset of like, okay, this is what I have to do the next week now.
Well, and again, it's almost like we have to try to figure out a way to put out our messaging. So it's everything from our national ads, our regional ads, digital ads that try to change the perception of what you're seeing played out at a national level. It goes to some interesting conversations. There's been a longstanding that, we don't like the federal government. We don't like them in our business. We don't really work with them on stuff. And when we were doing our Outdoor Recreation Task Force committee, we had local legislators that basically right now have been pretty high up in the legislature. And at the time we had that exact topic, is, does anyone realize that as we put forward political agendas, it's playing out on how people in the world, not just the country, but in the world, perceive our state? And is there a better way to present this? So maybe it's not that we don't like the federal government. We don't like maybe how certain things are managed. Mm-hmm. And we would like to have a voice in how they're managed. So it comes down to maybe trying to change the semantics with all of our folks that have that leadership role. And I would say on some levels that's been successful. I think I'll backtrack to another example. Early on in my career in state parks, we were working at the national level for the Land and Water Conservation Fund. I mean, just in and of itself, the fact that it has that conservation piece to it. And in general, there were some pretty high issues with our congressional delegation at the time. They just said, don't like it. They never really supported it. They didn't really care if it went away. A big chunk of the federal side was basically land acquisition. So as you can imagine, that gets a little interesting. Yep. So when I'd had sit downs with our congressional delegation, it was, let's switch the narrative. I'm not going to focus. So I didn't focus at all on the federal side. I focused on the state side of it. Here's what we do with the state funding. Here's, how it's been over the years, to the point that I ended up actually being a witness in a congressional hearing for Congressman Lummis at the time. And again, that was my focus. I didn't slam anybody. I didn't go against any political conversations. I was asked some pretty difficult questions by folks that did have an agenda, but I kept it on message to just what the critical components of the state side of the program were. And I think that's kind of how I maneuver my day to day now, is can I focus on the things that are critical that stay somewhat neutral? I don't try to get into the weeds, get out of my lane. And by that, hopefully keep the perception positive to who we are as a destination and the things that we provide outside of what you may see politically played out, you know, in national media.
Can I ask, how do you feel you learn some of those skill sets? I mean, I think so many of us, especially destination marketers, the marketing aspect, you want to be able to dial everything to 11, hit it with a bullhorn, and let the world know about you for that sense of attention. How did you learn to sort of navigate that skill set, saying, okay, maybe this is something we don't dial to 11, but we still implement it. We do act on it, but we just don't articulate it as loudly as maybe one of our contemporaries does.
Well, I think that's actually a really good question. I mean, I'm not going to say it's not an innate ability, but maybe you're born with, and I know a lot of us in this industry are born with that piece, but I think it's switching from that marketing piece to the management component. So that DMMO to a DMO or a DO type of concept is, I have to manage our community to the best of my ability. How do I take in all the inputs and make sure that the output is able to be successful? And I think it is, you still got to listen to all of the different, everything from, you know, truly reasonable to extreme, to what your visitors want to see, to also keeping your residents happy, and being able to figure that out sometimes muddles the message. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you get a lot of buy-in at the end of the day. And then you learn, especially in today's day and age of technology and data and all the stuff that we have, then we can tweak it going forward. So it's like, oh, we pushed it too far on this side. There's some folks that are a little upset. Can we dial it down into this messaging, which has been interesting. I mean, I think we get feedback and from a relationship standpoint, a little bit of trust to say that nothing we do is malicious. So, you know, Visit Cheyenne, we built up trust for so many years that it's, even if we do get the message wrong, it's not because we failed. I think a prime example of that is when I was actually at the CEO, or no, it wasn't the CEO, it was the annual meeting for DI in Baltimore. We had a local biker bar get called out for having a anti-gay shirt. Mm-hmm. That happened to be one of the business listings on Visit Cheyenne's listing. And it was a media frenzy. So as you can imagine, me being far away, implementing our communication plan is fine. I mean, that's where we have that crisis communication plan, but it misses the nuances of being able to get a statement out there, work with the mayor, take the biker bar off the listing, and work with Wyoming Equality, our LGBTQ group here for the state of Wyoming that's housed here in Cheyenne, and craft a message that is enough of a support of our citizens, while also not putting us out into the fray of trying to get into a political conversation about the situation. So it was more of a, how do we stand up and protect everybody, while at the same time not start jumping into, you know, discussions on values or religion or any of those components that then may play into that process.
Yeah, I mean, Dominic, you're essentially just describing playing 4D chess here. Like, just to put that out there, I mean, I think the only follow-up I wanted to ask is, I mean, that sounds really exhausting and daunting. Just wanted to kind of get your perception when an issue like that, which that's like a classic definition of a flashpoint, how do you feel it affects, you know, yourself and the staff of it? Because you're just trying to do your job the best you can. You know, you articulated being the public good here for the greatest amount of people. What would you say that how that affects your just personality and staffing of just the destination just to continue on?
I would say it's, I keep it as a way of, I guess pride is the way we look at it. As we mentioned early on, serving the public has always been a passion of mine. And when I say public, it means everybody. I mean, I think that's the thing, is we sometimes get in this idea that, you know, from every single level, there's going to be something to have a conversation as to why you wouldn't, you know, reach out, make the environment applicable to serve the greater good. And I think that's the nice pocket, especially at Visit Cheyenne that we sit in, is we try to think about all the user groups, all the different cultures, meet people where they are, and encourage them to come, you know, be a part of our home. And from that, I guess that makes it pretty easy. I mean, I know it sounds daunting, but it's little by little, it gets easy as long as you don't jump quickly to conclusions or are too fast to jump from one side or the other. I mean, we try to stay in that balance piece, which I think is how we're successful.
I mean, you're articulating navigating this as it rolls down. Have you ever been in a situation where you have to push back saying, hey, you know, local leader, elected official, if we do this, you know, we're going to take a brand hit on the tourism asset side. Have you ever been put in that situation where it's in reverse?
Yeah, a little bit. So we worked with the chamber as we were trying to get a bias crime bill passed here. And it's just for Laramie County, which is an interest. Well, not even Laramie County. It's actually just for Cheyenne. We have a pretty large Air Force base here in Cheyenne, very historic. It's basically the primary nuclear Air Force base for the country. And obviously, so we have a very diverse group of folks that come through. We also have some pretty big national companies like Walmart, Lowe's, those types of things. And Wyoming is, I think, maybe right now either one or two. So it's only one or two states that does not have a bias crime statute, so an actual state statute. And our focus on that, and again, without sounding political, we didn't really focus on, you know, we want to make sure that we're inviting to all people or trying to say that we're trying to be very diverse and think about equity and all of that type of a thing. What we focused on is this is bad business. I mean, at the end of the day, not having that in place is bad business. And it's true. I mean, the data backs it up. It goes back to our perception discussion. Is this just bad business not to have something like that in place? And that's how my statement reflected it. So we got a little bit of flack over, you know, as a visitor bureau, us entering into that type of a realm. But I think when you realize that the then cascading effect goes back to how the world sees you. So finally, the community is looking at that type of a thing, that we have a little bit more of a balanced approach. That hopefully, you know, folks realize that it was more positive than negative, regardless of, again, we weren't trying to attack anything. I mean, we're just saying this is something that isn't just best practice. It just means a big piece of our economy is not being successful because we don't have it in place.
I would articulate that's a necessary realm that destination organizations need to enter into. Was there ever a second of doubt of kind of like, all right, should I do this? Should I put this out there per se?
It wasn't really a doubt other than through our communication plan. I mean, I did pass it through our executive committee just to say, hey, I'm going to make the statement. I know even some of the board members aren't going to be super excited about it, just making sure. So it was more of an informative piece. So it was, you know, never want to broadside your board. And it goes to, I mean, is this going to, I mean, just because I made a statement and our local news covers everything, was it enough to throw, you know, the statewide legislators to say, oh, hey, Dominic thinks this. And it's like, no, that's not the case. You can see by my statement where we were trying to focus our messaging. But it does make me think, I think if anything, I thought of the broader scale, because I know during some of our calls for EDI committee and some of the CEOs that were unwilling to sign the pledge, their biggest concerns were, is, well, if I sign this pledge, will I have a job tomorrow? And yeah. And I think, like, for instance, I signed the pledge and I would stand behind it. I mean, if anyone, you know, board member, county commissioner, city council, would ask me, why would I do something like that? It's like, it's not, the key is it's not exactly value-based as much as it's brand promise for us as an industry. I mean, the tourism industry, travel, hospitality, you name it, again, comes back to that central core of serving people. So if we can't figure out how to be in the service of others, then we're probably in the wrong profession. And if I can't send that message enough to any leadership or decision-making type of person, then I'm probably failing. So I think that's the, for me, where I come from for some of those difficult decisions that I've made over the last few years.
Dominic, I know you're a Disney fan, and if Marvel ever wants to recast Daredevil, the man with no fear, I think they should look at you, buddy. So,
I appreciate that.
I mean, I think one thing I want to highlight, speaking of a big win through this and now your time there, is you all implemented a massive 10-year tourism master plan. That is a substantial and monumental undertaking for even communities that don't have the political, you know, situation happening in your state and community. Would you kind of walk through a little bit of that process and execution of your tourism master plan?
Well, we approached that pretty uniquely. Specifically, the reason it hadn't been done before is there were like a good handful of plans in the city, in the county. So I actually came up with the crazy idea in partnership with my predecessor, because we had I talked with him, and he ended up being our contractor for that through Rudloff Solutions. And I said, okay, Darren, here's my crazy idea. We've never done this before, but there's no way we're going to get this plan done if we don't include everybody else's plans. Mm-hmm. So using my professor hat a little bit, we took 36 plans that existed. I mean, it was the core plan of the downtown and the chamber's plan and the local EDC's plan and even statewide plans. We actually used State Parks plan, their outdoor rec plan. And we took everything and actually used some university students to do a literature review to pull out and extract all of the things that had common themes to them. I guess in retrospect to a previous discussion you and I had, I probably could have used ChatGPTX to analyze it, but maybe save myself some money. But outside of that, they were able to coalesce all of that into, originally we had 7 themes and then moved that and even made it tighter into 5. But the key is when you read through my plan, we actually then documented, okay, we're doing stuff with visitor experience and how we can work on how visitors, you know, experience our destination, with everything from building assets to even things like we talked about being more inclusive. So, I mean, it's all those things that we talk about. But it shows up, it's like, oh, well, this is in the city of Cheyenne's comprehensive plan. This is in the chamber's plan. So no one doesn't see themselves in the plan. But then we took it a bigger, broader step forward as we had a steering committee that was part of it. We did shareholder, stakeholder interviews. We did a visitor survey and a resident survey. And we made sure that at the resident level, we sent it out to the folks that usually are like, we don't like anything you do. So we, mm-hmm. even those, we tried to keep the bias down to a minimum, but we wanted to make sure we heard for those naysayers that said, you know, we don't always like what you have to say and do. And yeah, and from that, we were able to produce this document that really has been a great guiding document for us. As a matter of fact, I'm working on our current business strat plan for this year, for our fiscal year 24. We tie it to our budget. And yeah, it's been just a great guiding document. The only thing I've been told is it's a 10-year plan, so I shouldn't try to implement everything in like the first 2 years. Sure. So other than that, I mean, it's been pretty decent.
And it's a tremendous accomplishment under your leadership. So I don't want that to go under recognized as part of it. I appreciate everything you've shared today and your intel. I think besides being calm, cool, and collective, I think you're certainly not alone in your positioning of how the changing role of industrialization leadership is happening, right? You're wearing many more political hats, the savviness that you kind of talked about. I kind of was curious for the final question for others who maybe find themselves or see themselves now in political flashpoints and whatnot. What advice would you give to them, you know, for what you've learned and what you've been able to navigate successfully?
Yeah, and I'll definitely say that it has to be without arrogance, but I've talked about it a lot, is you want to be the person driving the bus. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of my colleagues, as you mentioned, they've grown up in that marketing space. They don't really want to extend their scope and get into either the politics of it or become that management component. But I think when you're driving the bus, then you get to say what direction you're going is, and it's nothing against my colleagues. I mean, I work closely with the chamber CEO and with the EDC CEO and with the mayor and with the county commissioners and local legislators. And obviously I'm not saying that I'm like bossing them around, but I try to show them that our industry is the positive one that can move needles for even the things that they're working on. Yeah, and that's totally. And that's why if we're the ones helping to push the direction, it makes it a lot easier for them to also be very successful in what they're doing. So I think for all of my colleagues is I would recommend, we always say you should have a seat at the table when it comes to economic development. I just say, be bold and take it a step further. You should be the one setting the table. You should be the one driving the bus. And you will find that as long as you're not doing it from an arrogant standpoint, it's got to be with true collaboration in mind, you'll be that much more successful.
Well, Dominic, I appreciate all your intel today. If folks want to get in contact with you, find out more about you and visit Cheyenne, where can they turn to?
So obviously Cheyenne.org is an easy one. And then my name, DOMENIC at Cheyenne.org is an easy way to email me.
Wonderful. Dominic, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you again for joining myself, Andreas Weisenborn, and Dominic Bravo on this month's episode of The Architects of Destination Advocacy. Please make sure to subscribe within your podcast listening service and to always catch the latest episode. To learn more about the work we do, please make sure to subscribe at our newsletter at destinationsinternational.org or checking out our content through the advocacy section at our website or speaking at one of our upcoming events. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.